We all owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, where we tell the stories of those who protect us at home and abroad. This is your host, Ben Bula Garcia. Allow me to frame our conversation today with excerpts from an opinion piece written by retired Atlanta police officer W.J. Butcher, published in 2016 in the Noonan Times-Herald. In 1979 interview for a job with the Miami-Dade Police Department, I was asked, "Why do you want to be a police officer?" I smiled and replied confidently, "Because I want to help people." The interviewer, whose attitude was terse and defiant, responded, "Then why not be a social worker? They help people." I didn't get the job, but it was at a time when I was wrestling with the proverbial issue of what's my calling. It would be 8 years after my initial interview before I would be granted the opportunity to be part of the Atlanta Police Department. Every young candidate for the position of police officer brings their own degree of talents and backgrounds to mesh into an occupation with the pay of a garbage man and the legal liabilities of a doctor. In large part, we are the necessary support to a denigrated society. In the same way the Constitution fails with an immoral society, our communities would succumb to the most evil and violent among us. Law enforcement professionals will target, capture, and separate the vilest from the innocent. Our eyes of justice know the devouring eyes of the wolf amongst the naive ways of the sheep. A law enforcement officer needs neither the permission nor the approval of the law-abiding citizen to render justice and prevent anarchy. So why would a young man or a woman want to volunteer for an occupation of such difficulty? It's not the money, risking your life, limb, and family for $30,000 a year. It's not the fame. What's more likely, a hero's parade or a YouTube perp walk? Just like there is a God-sized hole in our hearts that only God can fill, there's an emptiness in our soul that God has cleared for those divinely inspired to choose law enforcement as a career. Nothing of any great success is without risk, and the true joy of life is to follow a path whose reward is not of worldly virtue. Like convincing a young man to choose life over suicide, many times, delivering a baby on the couch of a public housing project, pulling an unconscious man from a burning car, holding a fatally shot officer in your arms before his last breath, and counting it a privilege to answer over 27,000 calls for service from complete strangers. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today knows a lot about those concepts. After serving in the United States Marine Corps, he pursued a career in law enforcement, eventually wearing the badge for 28 years. Those nearly three decades were filled with both hardship and rewards, but he found a balance and is with us today to share some of those lessons learned. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Rick Tippins.
Morning, Ben. How are you doing?
Well, after that long introduction, I need to take a break. Rick, you take it from here, and I'll be back after getting a sandwich.
What time is it out there again?
Well, it depends when people are hearing it. You know, we broadcast in several markets, Rick. This is the big time.
That's true. Maybe I shouldn't have said good morning. Good morning, afternoon.
It's fine. Listen, Rick, I know Marines are a salty bunch, so I guess it's only appropriate that you chose to begin your career as a sheepdog in the per capita murder capital of the United States, East Palo Alto.
Yeah. Lovely. Yeah, that was late 91, 92, I started there and really had my eyes open to after growing up in Napa Valley, which is, you know, kind of a, it wasn't at that time what it is now. There was, you know, probably less than 20 wineries up there. And I don't know how many are up there now, 300 or more, but it was still kind of a bubble, if you will. And then starting work in East Palo Alto, even after the Marine Corps experience was very eye-opening to me about, you know, some of the darkness that, you know, can be in our communities and in the need for that, you know, barrier that is the police officers between the good people of this, you know, country and some of the very few bad people. But, you know, the old saying about one rotten apple can spoil the whole barrel, right?
Sure. But I tell you, Rick, I'm not Palo Alto, Silicon Valley, Stanford, nice roads, great jobs. I've got kind of a disconnect here, but East Palo Alto, explain to us, what am I not getting here?
The geography of San Mateo County, which East Palo Alto sits in, is between Santa Clara County, which is their big city, San Jose, and San Francisco County, which is basically the entire city of San Francisco. San Mateo County has the San Francisco Airport in it, even though it's called the San Francisco Airport. And it just sits right there in the middle and on the west border of East Palo Alto, which is one of the most southern cities in San Mateo County, is the county line between Santa Clara and San Mateo. And there's a creek that is the delineating line, if you will. And on the west side of the creek, you have Palo Alto, and at that time, an emerging Silicon Valley, and, you know, homes sitting on 2 or 3 acres that look like movie stars should be living in them. And on the other side, you had drug addicts and prostitution and homicides and robberies and carjackings and everything else under the sun going on.
And did it never cross over?
It very rarely ever. I always looked at that creek as like having some sort of magic water in it. the Silicon Valley people, obviously, and unless people were commuting through the city, because university is kind of a throughfare, there was no reason for them to come over. And Palo Alto Police Department was pretty, locked on about keeping their crime down. And, I think that the criminals didn't really see a future in jumping across the border and, having to deal with the dragnet that Palo Alto had up at the time. But it was a stark contrast, those two cities. It was just amazing.
Now, Rick, we heard Mr. Butcher's opinion about what motivated him to become a law enforcement professional. What drove Rick Tippins into that line of work?
As a young, man, a lot of times you don't have a lot of direction, and the Marine Corps straightened that out for me. And when I got out of the Marine Corps, I worked in construction for a few months, like I think it was 10 months. And I just realized, this is not a long-term solution for me personally. It was like punching a clock, just, going out and digging in the dirt and coming home every day. And I just couldn't see myself doing that. I needed more fulfillment, in life. And I can't really tell you. Mr. Butcher, actually, that was well written. And I hear a lot of guys say that, they went in to this business to help people. And I'd be lying to you if I said that, at 24 or 23 or whatever it was, that was my motivating thing. I think it was more of an excitement and I think I can get more fulfillment out of life. It wasn't until I became a cop and was there for a few months or maybe 6 months, and you had some experiences about actually helping people, which, when you're a young person, you just, by virtue of your, number of years on this planet, you don't have the experience you have, or that a 30 or 40 or 50 year old has. But when you're a cop, you get that experience really quickly. And I found a complete and total different fulfillment out of that job than what I ever expected going into it.
Now, Rick, we mentioned East Palo Alto at that time, 91, 92, the per capita murder capital of the United States, which I still find, not just, again, that's not total murders, but murders per capita. That's still pretty shocking. It's seen great improvement since then, and we'll talk about that later on in the show. But you spent 3 years there cutting your teeth, and then you made a lateral move to the San Mateo Sheriff's Office where you finished out your career, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
I realized at about the 2.5-year mark that my career in East Palo Alto was going to be a lot like a NFL running back, kind of short and explosive, and I needed to go somewhere where I could have, less of a high impact on my body for one job. And the fact that East Palo Alto was the lowest paid department at the time, I think, in the entire Bay Area.
Then you go to San Mateo Sheriff's Office, you get involved in street crime, SWAT, narcotics, homicide, other sporty issues like that. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard in the introduction I said that his career was filled with both hardships and rewards, and we want to talk a little bit about how people in that industry deal with that. In Rick's case, he dealt with it by writing. You can explore more at ricktippins.com. We come back, we'll see more through life through the eyes of 28-year law enforcement veteran Rick Tippins. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're chatting with Rick Tippins. Rick is a former, a retired Marine, was a Marine, always a Marine. Also 28 years in the law enforcement industry. Rick, you learn things on the job. One thing I'm learning today is you always bring water into the studio to, you know, kind of wet my whistle and keep going. So BBG's lesson of today is do not bring sparkling water into the studio if you're going to be on the radio. That makes for a bad morning. So my apologies. Well, Rick, we're talking about your time on in the law enforcement business. And, you know, it's about, I joked about the water, but a lot of cases it's about learning lessons. And for those young law enforcement officers out there like yourself, you're in East Palo Alto, and it's a pretty sporty area. And there was a partner you had who was all of 5'4", blonde hair, maybe 100 pounds dripping wet, but on more than one occasion she saved your bacon and she taught you a very important lesson. I think it went something along the lines of, hey, this city is ground zero for karma. Tell us that story.
Well, I'll tell you that she was one of my training officers. She was there a night that, I was on a call and somebody, there was, I don't know, 8 or 10 of these guys. And we were working short that night. It was just two of us on duty. And there should have been 3 guys, which was at that time very short in a city that active, and a sergeant. We had a sergeant and the two of us. So we got in the same car and we just started shagging calls. And I was the lead on this one call and kind of lost my temper. And it wasn't anything physical, but it was heading that way. And it was between me and the guy, but there was, you know, another half dozen or more of his friends there. And it was just this gal and I. And I remember just feeling her tug my arm, my elbow. And she just kind of whispered in my ear and she said, "Rick, it's time to go." And the call wasn't done. I wasn't finished with the call, but it was time to go. Otherwise, it was going to get a lot worse. And it was things like that. Another time when I was actually with her as a trainee, I walked into a liquor store and, you know, people are coming in and out and they're buying, you know, booze or buying cigarettes or do whatever they're doing. And this one kid came in and he's probably, you know, 20 years old, and he started rapping, and they would just make up raps on the spot and it would all rhyme. And he was rapping about me being a rookie and not knowing what was going on in the town. And it was, I wish I'd recorded it, because now I would sit and listen to it and laugh. But at the time, it really, you know, it was insulting, because that's what his intention was, is to make fun of me. And again, she's like, "Rick, this city has a way of taking care of itself. Karma comes around in this city." And probably a month later, I was moved on to another training officer, and I came in, and we had, you know, before email and stuff, you just had a pigeonhole where you'd get mail and stuff like that. And she was working day shift and I was working night shift. And I came in and there was a Polaroid picture of the rapper laying on his back in the street, deader than a doornail. He'd been involved in a murder earlier that day. And she just left a note that said, "What comes around goes around." And I, to this day, my wife and I talk about karma. You know, when I get upset with somebody, and, you know, we talk about it, and there's just no other option but to calm down and move on in your life, because there's enough negativity in the world without adding to it. And I've learned these lessons, and part of my journey in learning those lessons was, you know, being involved in those stories like that.
Rick, you and I have talked about, and regular listeners to American Warrior Radio are sick and tired of hearing about my almost journey to being a police officer. And Reader's Digest version is my third year studying criminal justice, I decided it really wasn't the career for me, and I don't regret that. But part of my mission now is to help translate and educate and get folks to understand what the men and women who wear the badge do. And particularly in today's environment, I think that's so important. I hate to think that people out there, Rick, maybe look at someone, a law enforcement officer, and just they assume they're not even human anymore. And they don't get that, you know, these men and women have families. They want to go home. They've got aspirations. They someday want to write several great books. What are those? I mean, to help frame that discussion, Rick, for us, can you give us a couple of bookends, good and bad, of things that have stuck with you or just you could never shed after those 28 years wearing the badge?
Well, I think that you kind of touched on both ends of it. There is a disconnect between, and I want to say that there was my entire career between a lot of civilians and how they view police officers and just it not being an accurate accounting of what most cops are. And like you said, we don't go to some robotics company and say, hey, we'll take 100 more of those for, you know, we need to, these guys retired, so we're replacing them. They're not robots, they're human beings. And there is a testing process, there's the background process. But again, I don't care how deep of a background you do on somebody, there's those people that are going to slip through in any business, the CIA, law enforcement, it doesn't matter. And it's hurtful to the profession when you get somebody who is, you know, their moral compass doesn't, you know, face north all the time. And it's hurtful when there's a disconnect between, you know, officers and their community for whatever reason, whether it's, current events causing people to think a certain way or just ignorance. But on the backside of that, being an older, having ended my career and being in, a sergeant and a lieutenant with the sheriff's office, I hold cops accountable too. Because if I go out on the streets here, or even if a cop goes on the streets in Rhode Island and does something atrocious and it gets caught on video, it's a ripple effect, like throwing a boulder into a pond. And it'll ripple all the way out here to California and cause every cop in California to be viewed in the same light as that guy for whatever he did in Rhode Island. So we have to be consummate professionals. We have to, you don't have to lose your humanity or anything like that. In fact, I think there needs to be more of a human side to police officers and less of a robotic side. The cop with the wraparound sunglasses, give me your license or registration. And there's no dialogue. It's just, it's like you're ordering something at, from a McDonald's, machine.
Rick, I chuckle at that because I saw an interview where you said you never, you as a person and you as a law enforcement officer, never subscribed to the whole Judge Dredd way of doing things. And in researching for preparing for today's show, I see that East Palo Alto is really a story of a turnaround and things have gotten significantly better over there. And it's because the community came to trust its own police force.
Yes, that is true. And I'll tell you a little story. And I didn't talk to you about this before, but when I got hired in East Palo Alto, the fellows that came before me were their needles pointed in the opposite direction of South, a lot of them. And I suffered because of that. And I remember it being very aggravating to me because the FBI would come into town and they would follow us to calls. And it became a game to try to like make who the FBI undercover cars were. But if I really sat down and thought about it, it was aggravating because I had never done anything illegal. There was no reason for me to be watched or investigated or anything, but But the guys that had come before me and were for the most part fired or quit or had left the department by the time I got there really caused us a lot of problems. The 1992 and on crew that was hired as they tried to clean up that place, not just the city itself, but the police department as well.
Wow. That for me would be another good reason to get the heck out. And that sounds like 3 years maybe was an awful long time for you.
It was so busy down there. It went by in a blink of an eye, but you're right. There weren't the problems that were there before I got there. They had a new chief that was hired right before I got hired. He hired me and he really came in with the intent of cleaning the place up. He brought in a lot of mutual aid, did a lot for the city for reducing crime and what have you. And then some of the stuff I'm sure you were talking about just a second ago, businesses started coming in. Home Depot came into the town, IKEA. There's a whole bunch of businesses on the east side of Highway 101 now, and there's a bunch more on the west side. So the city's got money coming in, which helps. They can fund the police department better and, you know, just their city infrastructure a lot better. And it's not the same place it was when I work there. When I drive through, my eyes are wide in wonderment.
Rick, when we come back after this next break, I want to talk about how things aren't the way they used to be. And you touched a little bit on it, the ripple effect, given the instant, it used to be a 24-hour news cycle. It's now 24 seconds, and how bad news and bad examples spread from one side of the country and back, and other reasons that I can't think of a more difficult time to try and convince a young person to go into law enforcement officer. But we'll get feedback from you. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. I'm chatting with Rick Tippins. You can find out more. Visit Rick Tippins, TIPPINS.com. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're speaking with Rick Tippins. Rick is a 28-year veteran of the law enforcement business. He also served some time with the United States Marines. Rick, we touched before the break about just how things have changed since, you know, I'm an old guy, Rick, so the 90s don't seem like all that long ago, but I guess they really are. And it strikes me, though, you're the expert, but Ben's dumb question of the show, it strikes me that we no longer have, it's not just some guy who had, you know, one too many bottles of, I'm going to be a knucklehead today. I mean, there's just a wild disrespect for police officers out there, maybe authority in general. Is that, am I off base here, Rick?
No. And like, I don't work in some of these states like Idaho and where they get a lot of, you know, support for their law enforcement. So I can only speak for, you know, California law enforcement, which in my dealings, and I've traveled around, I've been to some schools in other states where California has some pretty professional standards. But it seems like they've decriminalized so many things and, you know, you can arrest somebody for, burglary, you know, breaking into somebody's house, which if you think about it, if you came home and your house is ransacked and if any of your listeners are listening to this right now and this has happened to them, they will know in a way that somebody who hasn't had that happen to them, the feeling of just absolute violation and then insecurity. Their castle's been violated. So if somebody can do that, you can arrest them. And I've done this, gone and been booking the evidence. And as I was driving back out of the county center area, the kid who I just arrested is walking home.
Wow.
So there is just an absolute there. And I don't want to say, I mean, there is now I respect the police. When I was a kid, I don't think it was respect as much as it was a fear of the police and my parents, if I ever was brought home by the police, but, you know, whatever it takes to, you know, keep a kid, you know, on the right path. And my parents made it very clear that, you know, you will not have contact with the police. And if you do, you know, you better hope they keep you. And I just don't think that that is the mindset of not only a lot of parents nowadays, but a lot of kids and young adults.
Yeah, I chuckle because, Rick, I had a little experience earlier in my life when I was a much, much, much younger young man out at night doing something I should have been doing. And they, of course, they took a small town. You know, they took us down to the local clink, and all the other kids' parents came to get them. But my parents had that same response as yours, like, no, keep him overnight. And so, you know, I spent the night there playing chess with the local sergeant, whatever he was, but it was still pretty darn embarrassing the next day at school. That's not the kind of street cred I was looking for. But let's talk, you touched on families, and I think that's, you had mentioned before, Rick, that in some communities that one of the challenges is, and we're seeing the, unfortunately, the fruits of that now is, from the very cradle, these kids are trained to be scared of cops and to dislike cops.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's you and I talked earlier about this, but if you take a kid in a bad neighborhood with a bad family, a lot of times, from the day they're born, when a cop car drives by, there's a sense of dread that comes through the house. People closing the windows, dad runs out the back door, you know. And the kid sees this. Well, parents are every kid's idol up until a certain point where they're old enough to either, you know, make their own decisions and become a good person, or they carry on that same lifestyle. But growing up, you know, for 10, 12, 13 years of, you know, having your house raided by the police, every contact with the police isn't a negative. And that negative is supercharged because it's directed at your parents. Your mom gets arrested. Your dad gets arrested. I don't agree with the parenting that results in that, but I also understand how it happens. And if I was raised in that situation, I'm not saying I wouldn't be any different.
How do we change that, Rick? I mean,
wow.
Yeah, we've only got a 1-hour show. So, but I mean, have you had any experiences, or did you have experiences when you were on the force where you did just a little random act of kindness that might have just set a spark burning in the different direction for one of those young persons?
Well, I had a couple, and you and I talked about the gal who was a crackhead, and she, her mother was raising her child, and she snuck into the, this is right after the holiday. She snuck into the grandmother's garage and stole her own daughter's bike to sell so that she could feed her habit. And my partner and I were touched by this, and there was a lot, you know, we were so busy in East Palo Alto. This was kind of not an everyday thing. And when we woke up, because we were graveyards, went home, went to bed, woke up, we both went to the store and split the cost of a bicycle for this girl and brought it back to her. And I never got in contact with her again. She was 10 years old, as I remember. But, you know, you just hope that things like that maybe lead to, you know, her having a different view of, you know, our profession later on in life.
Rick, you told me a story about a young officer who, I don't know how long you've been on the force, but he was involved in a shooting, and he just, I mean, he went in and, you know, put his gun and badge on the desk and said, "That's it, I'm out." What in your life, have you always been good about finding that balance? Because that's the challenge. And one of the most heartbreaking things I've ever heard on this radio program, Rick, was another police officer who said, just given the nature of what he did out there, outside his home, when he got home late at night, if his little girls were already in bed, the first thing he would do is he'd go in and check to make sure they're still breathing. And to hear a father have to say that just breaks my heart. It makes my head explode.
Yeah. I think that we all, every cop deals with, you know, the stresses differently. We all have different stresses. I mean, you know, there's guys working in really big violent cities, and there's guys working out in the country where they don't, you know, they get maybe a call every week. But again, it's a balance to balance your life, your personal life. It's a balance in how you deal with what you see at work. If it's affecting you negatively, it's tough for some guys to go ask for help. I always wanted to talk. I'd come home and I wanted to tell stories. Hey, you know, this guy did this. He ran, car flew off this embankment, you know, and, just, and in my mind, it's like a movie, you know, and I want, and it was exciting. And
your kids, you know, are scarred and, for life.
Well, I wouldn't be telling it to my kids. I would be telling it to my wife. But there's guys that, you know, we've been at parties and their wives are like, he never says anything about work. And, you know, I would just look at that cop and I'd be like, okay, that's you. And for me, I got to get it out. I got to get it out. Otherwise, you know, who knows? It gets bottled up and it, you know, it's someday it's going to come out. And I've never had a whole lot of issues with that part of the job, but I, you know, you talked about the guy that was in the training program and at a agency here in the Bay Area. And he got in a shooting one night and the next day he showed up and turned all his gear in and was like, yep, this isn't what I signed up for. And I really applaud that kid because he had enough self-awareness to realize like, hey, if I stick with this, just, you know, so that I can wear a badge and look cool and say I'm a cop, you know, I'm going to put myself in danger and other guys in danger down the road because I'm not really into this.
Rick, if you had one piece of advice for young people out there, or frankly, whether it's military or law enforcement, or just some of us trying to deal with life out there, I mean, does it come down to communication and being willing, being aware of where your weaknesses are and being willing to communicate that and ask for help? Or what is Rick's 1, 2, 3 solution?
Yes. And I know a lot of cops are going to be like, I ain't asking anybody for help. People ask us for help because that's kind of that's our job, right? We help people. People don't help us. We're cops. We help, you know, if I need help, I'll help myself. But I know cops. I actually know one personally who sat on a bench and had a gun in his mouth and was very close to suicide. And, you know, he recovered, thankfully, and got out of the business. And, you know, the job affected him like that. And if it's affecting, you know, say back up, if you're having problems with anything, whether it's like your knee hurts, you know, we want to find a remedy for it. So if your mind hurts or your soul hurts because of this job, you have to figure out how to fix that. And if it's going to talk to somebody professionally, if it's coming home and vomiting your entire day to your wife and she's willing to listen to that, then, you know, you just have to have enough guys and gals in this profession really, really, really have to have some self-awareness in order to safeguard themselves from a lot of bad things that can come from working in this job. So you get guys in the military and we all know about PTSD and all, you know, it's, effects on our military personnel, right? From combat.
Sure.
Law enforcement. And I have one of my best friends is a retired force recon guy. And he and I have talked about this at length. They get lambasted in combat, you know, guys getting hurt, them killing people and boom, boom. And then they come home and it's, you know, they get to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cops don't get that, you know, that, fire hose, you know, that the military gets. They get more of a drip, but it's for 30 or 28 years, just every day, a little bit of stress, you know, a little bit of stress. And then sometimes, you know, it spikes, but every day you're in that car for 12 hours. We work 12-hour shifts. I know not everybody does, but for 12 hours, you're, you know, at least in the yellow, if not in the red, when you're driving around. And the guys nowadays with all, you know, the issues with cops getting ambushed and what have you, that they're a lot of them are likely just rolling in the red for 12 straight hours.
Yeah.
And never come out of the yellow, even when they get home. And that's not the healthiest way to live your life.
And Rick, that's why I wanted to have you on. It's so important for people out there to hear these messages. And ladies and gentlemen, please, you know, hear this, go to AmericanWarriorRadio.com. You'll be able to find the podcast there. And please share it with other folks that need to hear this. Now, one of the things that Rick Tibbins did to help deal with the stress and get it out was write. You can find out more at RickTibbins.com. When we come back, we'll find out what happens when you put a wild tiger in a cage. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Mueller Garcia. We're talking with Rick Tippins. Rick had a 28-year career in law enforcement. And it's interesting, Rick, you came to me via another Marine. Your interest in writing peaked when you went to jail. Hold on, let me clarify that. When you worked in a jail, right?
Hey, I was gonna roll with that. What? I had a whole backstory for you.
Well, you know, it's our folks love stories.
Yeah, when you get hired by the sheriff's office and when you get promoted by the sheriff's office, they reward you by sending you to jail. So a lot of guys don't like the jail. And when I was younger, I didn't either because I'd been running around in a police car going 100 miles an hour with bullets flying around and my hair on fire and a lot of other stuff that I probably shouldn't talk about on a family show. But within a week, I'm sitting in a housing pod working graveyard, and most of the graveyard shift you give the inmates some rec time, and then by 10 o'clock everything's shut down until 6 in the morning. So you can twiddle your thumbs, you can do push-ups, or you can make up stories and write them. And that's what I did. I really thought I would was interested in making a movie, and naively thought, you know, I'll just write down the story and then I'll figure out how to make the movie later. And, you know, quickly realized that I wasn't going to make a movie, but I still had the interest in writing down, you know, these fictional stories in a screenplay format, which I taught myself how to do. And so every time I found myself in a, transferred to a unit where there was a lot of downtime, if in those cases, I just would jot down these stories. And that's kind of where it started.
Well, now, Rick, was it not just to relieve the boredom, but was it kind of cathartic for you as well? I mean, were there elements of what was going on in your life and career that made it into the pages of these books, or not necessarily?
I think there always is. You know, if you've read A World Slowed, the first book, there's a character in there, and he's kind of a mixture of some guys that I was in the Marine Corps with, and then obviously we were young when we were together, but my idea of what they will be like when they're, you know, 65 to 75. And so a lot of the, not necessarily, you know, verbatim, the things that happened to me or that I saw or that I've heard from other guys, but these things do, you know, you draw from all your experiences to write. And then some of it's just made up. I mean, it is fiction after all, right?
Right. Well, so I do have to ask you this question, given that you were introduced to American Warrior Radio by G. Michael Hoff, another Marine. What is it with you Marines and your post-apocalyptic stories? I mean, do you guys know something the rest of us should know, Rick? I mean, what's going on?
Well, I think after being I will tell you. So the reason I got into it is because I commuted 60 miles each way for years from where I live now to the San Mateo County Sheriff's Office, which is in Redwood City. And a lot of the time I had my small kids and I would take them over to the peninsula where my in-laws live and I would drop them off. So I figured if something ever happened, I needed to be prepared to walk home 50 or 60 miles with these two little kids. So I always had stuff with me. At that time, I was the three-day thing. I'm like, if I can't get these kids home in 3 days, then I'm in big trouble. So I'd have 3 days of water, food, whatever. And I started listening to, you know, books on tape to help with the boredom of the drive. And G. Michael is just one of the guys that I listened to his entire series and then later reached out to him for a little guidance on how to get started in this business. And he answered my single question that I asked him, which caused me to have about 10 more. And so I was pacing about the house and wishing I'd asked him all of those questions in the first place, because I didn't want to bother the guy. And my wife just finally looked at me and said, well, he's not going to answer a question you don't ask. So, and then walked away. And so I got a hold of him again via email, and we ended up talking on the phone, and he kind of, you know, is my sponsor, if you will, in the, book writing world.
So if folks go to ricktippins.com, they can see, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rick, because it is the interweb, but A World Slowed, Tears of Chaos, and then your third book, Chains of Tyranny. And this is all one series, right?
That's correct. And there's more books coming. I'm probably about a third of the way through on the fourth book, which will, I'm not, maybe in spring that'll come out, but Chains of Tyranny will be out, I think, the first week in December.
Now, real quick, I kind of made me chuckle. I heard you were doing an interview with a podcast somewhere, and you start off with screenplays, and then one of the lessons you learn, though, is, you know, movies have budgets, and the great thing about putting in a book is it costs nothing to blow up the world, whereas on film, you got extras and, you know, pyrotechnics and other stuff. So really, writing turned out to be the perfect fit for you.
Yeah, writing the books is a lot, for me, is a lot easier. I don't like, when that creative juice starts flowing, I don't want to be thinking about, well, you can't have a submarine because that's going to cost this much, or you can't have, you know, three Blackhawks, you got to have one, or, you know, whatever you're writing about. And it's more enjoyable for me. And you know, I'm retired after a long career in law enforcement. And although I'm very serious about this and, you know, work very hard to be successful at this, it is something I enjoy.
Well, don't give up, Rick, because with the advent of all this animation now and computer stuff and green screens, you know, who knows? Matthew Marsden might be playing you pretty soon on the big screen. We're pretty much out of time. We've got about just a minute left, Rick. What other things do you want to share with the listeners? What do they need to know about what they can do to find balance in their life?
Well, and I always say this, and I said it before, everybody's different. So you have to be self analyzing, you know, you have to have some inner perspective, and the more of that you have, the more you'll realize what you personally need in your life, which everybody's life is unique to them. And in my life, you know, I struggled early on, you know, wanting to be at the tip of the spear and be on every specialized unit and, you know, but also be there for your kids' games and, you know, be there for your wife and stuff. And, you know, over time, I came to understand that you don't always have to be the guy out there, you know, leading the charge. And sometimes you got to go home and you got to be there to tuck your kid in or to take him to, you know, soccer or hockey or whatever it is that your children are involved in. And, you know, be a good, your role model, whether you realize it or not. And that is the most important thing as a parent that we do is you know, teach our kids how to be good citizens.
Rick, I appreciate it. Great close. Folks, you can find out more. Visit ricktippins.com, TIPPINS.com. You can find this podcast and others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Deezer, Spotify. We're everywhere. But more people need to hear these messages, as you can tell from our guest today. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures will remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.